And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day after a little rain, a little bad weather yesterday afternoon and evening. Hope everybody's all right. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe along for the ride. Elijah Campbell, manning things at our game studios. Looking at something yesterday after we got off the air. It's pretty interesting. It was long. It looked like sometimes whenever I was getting my report card and maybe there were some conduct, let's just say, areas on this report card. So it could be lengthy because teacher said I talk too much and Darren needs to be quiet and all the other stuff that was written over the years.
Well, you picked a good career.
I did. It's the one that made the most sense. I tried a lot of things, and a lot of things didn't make any sense on going down that path. This one makes sense. But when I see Aaron Brewer did not practice, Jayon Brown, DNP, Tommy Hudson, DNP, Julio Jones, DNP, which is did not practice, Brett Kern, DNP, Taylor Lewan, DNP, Racy McMath, DNP, NWI, Willie's boy, DMP, did not practice. And then I see a lot of LPs, not LP Field. Limited participation, Denico Autry, Blasting Game, A.J. Brown, Dupree, first name Bud, Rashawn Evans, Sharif Finch, Chris Jackson, Ben Jones, Jeremy McNichols, Roger Saffold, Jeffrey Simmons, and then I see a couple FPs, full participation, Caleb Farley and Tierre Tart.
I have to say, my eyes popped open when I saw Caleb Farley, full
of
practice.
All of that, hey, all that's right. Literally the first thing I gravitated, like that whole list, that long, like three
pages of players.
Caleb Farley, full participant.
I thought they were going to run out of paper. Fortunately, the Jags only had like four guys in the list, so they could fit it in on one page.
And you hadn't heard of really any of them other than Carlos Hyde, who's been playing since 1982.
He's like 39 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, that's – Willie, that's funny you said that because that's – literally the first thing that jumped on me, I was like, okay, I'm out of breath reading this thing. Oh, by the way, Caleb Farley, full participant? What?
Yeah, so you guys, you missed, but Wayne Beggarly on Twitter, he tweeted at me, and this is a great Chris Jericho gif. This is a promo he did back in the 90s. But he was in a feud with a guy that called himself the man of 1,000 holds. And so Chris came out to the ring and said, well, I know 1,001, and he proceeded to – open a list that was a long list and read them off, but he said like the same moves like multiple times, but he sent that gif and said, this is the Titans injury report. And it was accurate. That's exactly what it was. So it was, I saw that yesterday and went, well, this should be interesting. But the positive, to find some positive in this, at least some of those LPs included AJ Brown, Caleb Farley, Bud Dupree, some guys that have been on a milk carton the last couple of weeks. I think you at least take that. Who knows what it means, but if that means they're going to play on Sunday. But the fact that they were at least somewhat of a participant is a good thing.
I know Wednesdays, that's not the injury report that's really – but like today, it'll be interesting. Does it look exactly like today? Is it better? Is it worse? And then, of course, Friday will be the big gauge, right? That'll be – what does it look like on Friday? But as we sit here today, with all that being said, does anybody really believe Caleb Farley will suit up and play on Sunday?
No.
I don't know.
I don't really know. I don't really know what you want me to say to that.
I sound like John Candy and Uncle Buck.
Really, the answer is how much of the – let's use the Trent Dilfer term. In the quiet time when he – when he's away from everybody, how much has he advanced his mental preparation? I think we all feel like physically he can help in some ways. Even if it's just, hey, just go cover this guy, man. We you never have enough people to cover. We got issues in the secondary. We just need you to cover this guy.
Wouldn't you think that about Elijah Molden?
No, Elijah Molden is not nearly the physical talent as Caleb Farley is. He's not as big. He's not as fast. Okay. Elijah Molden was sort of billed as the guy that's more ready to be plugged in right away. But he's been overmatched.
I was going by what you just said of just throwing a body out there that can just simply help right now. I understand the upside is much larger for Farley. That's why, hence, he was a first-round pick and Molden was a third-round pick. But, I mean, your description of what they need right now, I mean, how does Elijah Molden not fit that?
Well, he's been exposed as not ready. He's not fast enough. He's been burned. Like, I think they really had this vision of Molden as the slot guy who's going to blitz. He's going to do a little bit of Logan Ryan. He's going to be the physical. He's, you know, his dad played in the NFL, so he has a good understanding. And right now, he's just not – he has not been productive. Let's just be honest. They have moved him down the depth chart. Now, hopefully, it's not over. Hopefully, he responds well, and he goes back into the quiet time and does the work and can come out better on the other side. When you're a young defensive back, you're going to go through the fire.
Sure.
You're going to be tested. You're going to have bad days. So it's how you handle it. But they have had to take a step back with Molden. He was a day one, put him in there. And then they've had to reassess at this point. And now they're having to reassess again because there's clearly an issue with Chris Jackson, right? I don't know. Was he on the list? I lost track. I think he was on the list.
I said Chris Jackson, didn't I?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's. Yeah,
Chris
I think
Jackson
at this
was
point,
limited. He was an LP.
So
field.
Limited. So
at this point, it's better to just tell you who wasn't on the list.
Yeah, he was over at LP.
About half and half.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Darren's name even popped up on the list. I don't
but
know
Farley,
what he was doing.
But
well, I do have an ice pack on my back, so yeah, that would qualify.
But from the day they picked Farley. The day after was all filled with all of the questions. Hey, he's got a back issue. Hey, he didn't play last year. Hey, how quick can he be ready to go? And he said all the right things. But then he gets a second injury on top of that, the shoulder injury that's plagued him for the last few weeks. So he's really playing catch-up in terms of his development. So I don't think it's realistic to think he's just going to jump in there and be a star. I could be wrong, but I think they're going to have to work him in carefully as possible. But physically, if they can just play to his strength some and use him some, that would help because they desperately need help in the secondary. We talked about all the long plays they're giving up. That's a problem.
And if it happened Sunday, you do wonder. Trevor Lawrence got a pretty big arm. I mean, I know Zach Wilson does too. So I don't know who's got better receivers. I mean, it's kind of I don't know. I don't even know who wins that category. Maybe Jacksonville by a nose. I wouldn't say either one. I mean, right? They're both just kind of, I would say they're just average receivers. That's what they have.
Yeah.
Let's see where Corey Davis is at the end of the year. I think he's better than average. I'm not calling him a great receiver, but does Jacksonville have anybody as good as Corey Davis?
Yeah, I mean, DJ Shark.
Yeah, Shark.
He's a good player. Shark is a good player.
Chenault.
Chenault's not bad.
What position is Chenault? He's a hybrid kind of guy. I don't think, but he's capable, no doubt, of making some big plays.
He's the baseball player you put over second base.
Signed Marvin Jones. Well, they obviously have Agnew.
Yeah, Jacksonville's got better receivers. They do.
Tavon Austin, who I think has played for 23 teams.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got better receivers. They're not great, but they're better than the Jets.
Well, Jameson Crowder is a good. Davis, Keelan Cole,
Berrios,
who used to be on the Jets.
Yeah, Keelan Cole, Berrios.
Berrios is a little change of pace. Quickness. They got a little, and of course they drafted Elijah Moore, who was out. But of course that doesn't factor into what we're talking about here. So let's just call it a wash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, as we know well, we're talking about trying to piece together a lineup that can beat the Jags. After that, the next few weeks they could be underdogs in three or four straight games.
Could be.
Could be.
Yeah. How about will be.
Well, hopefully they get healthier in the meantime and close the gap a little bit. But the challenge is that the next few, three or four teams bring to the table. Oh, boy.
What does this tell you? Laquon Treadwell is on the practice squad for the Jags. Remember how much stock he had coming out of Ole Miss?
Yeah. Man, but his stock has plummeted a long time ago.
Oh, big time, because he never did anything.
He was just a bust.
Big time.
Unfortunately. Just one of those guys that it didn't translate to the next level.
Tim in Clarksville has a message that he would like to pass on via our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com.
Is it clean?
Yes. Yeah. It's just one of those messages. Please stop saying the hard G on Jif. It's pronounced like the peanut butter brand, Jif. Just check with the person who invented them. Tim from Clarksville.
I'm sorry, Tim. I don't know that person.
Yeah, I don't know that person. Do you know that person?
Does anybody
Could you
know
put
person?
Us in touch with that
yeah.
person?
What's his number?
What's his
or
name?
Or her. His or her.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. I'm glad you know.
I'm not saying he's wrong. He may be right. Has he talked to the person?
We've gone down this rabbit hole before, and it is supposedly, it is, without hearing it from the horse's mouth, it is Jif, like the peanut butter.
Okay. Gift Jif, whatever.
We have gone down this rabbit hole before, but, you know, once again, that was – I don't remember all the layers we went through that day. You know, I'm sure we had all kinds of things on the internets that told us it was Jif and not Gif.
Okay.
But I do believe we did come to the conclusion it was Jif, and I can relate because yes. I love peanut butter. And
I do love peanut butter. So, Tim, thank you for listening. When you send a text, I generally will read it.
So. And thanks for putting your name on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, we'll come back. We'll switch gears with our buddy Caleb Joseph. Last night.
Not Farley. Joseph.
Not Farley. Caleb is not, you know, he is not, he's going to be a full participant as well, just like Farley. Joseph will be a full participant on the other side. Crazy game last night. Talk a little baseball with Caleb. It's been a while since we've caught up with him. We'll do that next here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD, products curated for life. Don't forget, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. The baseball music in the background means we must be talking baseball. That's exactly what we're going to do. Let's bring in our good buddy, Caleb Joseph. He's on the line with us, Nashville legend, professional champion.
Champion.
I was going to say, what do you do
after
that?
Champion.
He's a legend.
Legend, yeah. Legendary air drummer, I guess is the best way to put it. He was also a baseball player. He's been in the bigs for a long time. He's a catcher, and he's a really good guy. I don't know about his bowling. We've been to bowling events with him. I'm not sure where he stacks up. I think he's
skeet shooting.
A little bit under 200. Is that fair to say? You're under 200, right? You're not 200 and over, are you? Uh-oh, well, hold on.
He sounds like he's 100 miles away. We got to bring him closer.
Is he back up in Canada? We can't hear him.
You can't hear me? Oh, no.
Okay, now you're coming in.
Yeah,
that's better. Sorry. Dodging thunderstorms here. It's going to take grass. Golf
course. Nope. We're back. We're back to this.
Uh-oh. Put him on hold.
Near and far. We have to try this.
The tarp
again.
Has been pulled real
yeah,
quick.
We're going to pull the tarp real quick.
Real quick.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are under a weather delay.
Did he say he's on the golf course?
Sounds like he said he was on the golf course.
It's somewhere. Starting to rain here, so that's probably not a good day to be on the golf course.
Okay.
We see Efforty.
Elijah's working on this. Did you guys watch to the end last night?
I did. Yeah. I did. It was fun.
I felt for Alex Reyes, the pitcher for the Cardinals. He threw about the best slider you can throw on the first pitch to Chris Taylor. It was absolutely nasty. And then the next time he goes to the slider, it was a spinner.
That second one when he did it and watching it go across the plate, I was like, man, he just hung one. That's not going to be good.
They call it the old cement mixer. It wasn't really breaking.
Well, let's see if Caleb is with us. Caleb, are you there?
How is that?
Yes.
Sound loud and clear.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm dodging rainstorms here at the Tennessee Grasslands Golf Course. Just got absolutely soaked, and I think I might have had a little bit of water in the microphone there. Sorry about that, boys.
Yeah, it is. It's not a great golf day, is it? I mean, it's. I think we're supposed to dodge showers all day, right? Maybe?
Yeah, but you remember, I was up in Seattle, so I've gotten very used to this rainy everyday thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the best part about that is I've got an excuse. Well, you know, I shot pretty good, but it was raining outside, so I was probably five over more than I would.
I missed your answer. We missed your answer because it was a little muffled. Bowling, you're under 200 guy or over 200 guy?
Well, I mean, I'd tell you if the boards weren't warped to the gutters every time, I'd probably be a 275 to 300 bowler. But
okay,
you know, I could keep up there with Mookie Betts. It's hit or miss. But those events with the Predators are always great.
Yeah, I would say with the guards, I'm definitely 275, 300, somewhere in that range. If I'm bowling
perfect
with Maddox and I get to use the guards too, I am spectacular.
That's right. That's exactly right.
What did you – we were just talking about Chris Taylor's home run. I think what's cool is, you know, you're always looking for ways you can incorporate that to youth sports, and it's like, hey, you know, here's a guy that didn't start the game, right? Because, you know, the early stages at, you know, 9 and 10, you're still trying to get – they're playing all the head games and all that stuff, and it's like, hey, guys, here's a reason why you don't put your head down. He didn't start. He wasn't – and then Kenyon, you know, defensive weapon, and then the next thing you know, hits the game-winning home run. I mean, that's why you just never know in baseball when your number's called. You could end up being the star, and it's not like he would have ever thought that in the first inning.
You're right. So many improbable heroes in the postseason. I think that's why people love it. Think about a guy, Steve Pierce, that was kind of on nobody's radar years ago, ended up winning World Series MVP for the Red Sox, caught fire in the second half. That team, especially in the National League, and that's what you find with the Dodgers and some of these NL teams, Giants probably as well, that you have so many guys that are versatile. They have to be so versatile in the game, and they've got deep, deep depth. And so you might not see them at the start of the game because they might be playing an analytical matchup, but their bench is just as dangerous as the guys that might be starting the first four or five innings. And you know what? If you stay ready and you stay prepared and all your work is good and you can make an impact late in the game. And that, I mean, I can't tell you how many times that actually happens, especially when the games start counting and meaning the most. You're going to depend on your 20th, 21st, all the way through 25th guy just as much as you are your star player. And so for guys playing high school, college baseball or whatever, middle school, even youngsters, I remember a story back a long time ago when I was a 12-year-old youth tournament and I wasn't really playing. Ended up finding my way into the game around the fifth or sixth inning. Of course, you only play seven in youth ball, and ended up pitching the last two innings. We were down by five, hit a grand slam to tie it up after we had scored one run, and ended up kind of being the hero, and I didn't even play in that little bitty 12-year-old youth game. So it's prevalent in youngsters, in high school, college, and you can get on the map by being a hero if you're prepared and ready and stay in the game.
I love that story. I thought the Cardinals deserved to lose. Anytime you take out a McFarland, you deserve to lose. I mean, you stick with a McFarland, you let him get the out, and you brought up analytics, and that's probably what analytics said. In fact, I think I heard Cardinals skipper talk about it after the game, that he hits lefties well, Chris Taylor, and they took him out, made the switch, and the next thing you know, didn't matter. They bring in the righty, and he hits the two-run homer. You've dealt with analytics a lot in your career. I don't know. I know we've talked about it with you, but I don't know how exactly you feel about analytics. I think there's a whole lot of good, but there's probably a lot of pushback as well because, you know, things like, for example, you that bring to the table. You know, you are a clubhouse guy. You're a guy that you can't quantify what you're going to bring to the room. You are a guy that is good for the room. Well, I don't know if there's a number for that in analytics. I don't know if that equates anywhere. Overall, Caleb, what do you think? Is it used too much? Is it used properly? Where would you go with that in baseball?
Yeah, I think it's a case-by-case scenario, right? You have quite a few teams that are totally dependent on it and some teams that probably could catch up a little bit. I want the information. Look, we've been using numbers in the game since the inception of it. That's how you quantify people's worth and how they're doing. And you've got to have somebody at the top or hopefully near the top that is able to sift through all of the numbers, because some of them are great, some of them are not so great. And just like you said, some things that the numbers can't quantify, they can't quantify experience, can't quantify heart, can't quantify desire, all these intangibles that some players bring. I mean, look, I was a teammate with TJ McFarland in Baltimore, and he's a left-handed sinker baller, you know, and a lot of these analytics, they want to chase the whiff, the swing and miss. In my opinion, if analytics had it their way, they'd only throw pitches that did not have any contact. And when you're playing defense, they don't want anybody to ever hit the ball. So what happens is you end up finding ways to usually chase whiff. If you're looking for that swing and miss, you're going to pitch into damage spots, because where most guys swing and whiff the most is where they believe they can do damage. You know, nobody swings at the up and in fastball if they don't ever hit it out. They want that middle away fastball, and so that's why you can go a little bit below the zone with maybe a fastball or a slider. So I guess if you're following my logic here, sometimes you have to pitch into damage to get that whiff. TJ's got the ultimate ground ball, low damage pitch in a sinker, and the game will tell you when it's time to make a change. That's if you have any sort of experience and you've been around for a long time. The game will always dictate and tell you when to make the move. Now, so many of these clubs have everything mapped out and predetermined, and what happens is you have some of these guys that are hamstrung by what they have to do and the moves they have to make. And I have no idea if Shields hamstrung that way. It doesn't seem like the Cardinals are incredibly heavy with the analytic hand, but there are clubs that do that, and you see it night in, night out, moves that are made, and everybody in the team and the stadium is shaking their head going, I just don't understand this. And you look at the numbers, and look, the numbers are not favorable over a career path or whatever, but the guy that you're bringing in to replace the guy that's dominating, maybe his last three outings have stunk, but his career numbers look pretty good. So analytically, that looks like a good matchup, and you can't be blamed. But the game is telling you what it wants. And too many times we veer away from that. The clubs that are blending it perfectly are usually the ones that find themselves not having to answer these type of questions. But look, we experienced this, what, last year with Tampa Bay? You know, yep. How easily have we forgotten already, yep, that Tampa Bay might have blown a World Series by being heavy analytically handed. Now they can come back and say, well, we won 100-something games this year and won the division. How do you like that? Well, at the end of the day, World Series champs is really the only barometer and measure, so we'll see what happens this year.
I have to believe, Caleb, this is it for Joe West. Cowboy Joe, I think that's his nickname. other people have nicknames for him. I don't think we can use those on the radio, but this is it for him. I have to believe you've been behind the plate many Joe West games over the years. Do you have a Joe West story for us?
I do. I'll make it quick. Years and years ago, I was the Old Timers Banquet receiving an award, and Joe West was a keynote speaker. He came in with a jacket and started talking about how when he was coming up in the minor leagues, it was tough, making no money, and he would occasionally be asked to go speak at some of these banquets. And to try and make any sort of cash, he'd find a way to put some silverware in his pocket, take it to the local pawn shop, and try and pawn it off for a nickel or so, just so he could eat breakfast the next day. So as he's telling this story, he starts to pull out a piece of silverware and sets it on the podium. Joe talks for about 40 minutes, all right, and every two or three minutes he puts another piece, reaches into his jacket pocket, puts another piece of silverware on the podium. By the end of his talk, 30, 40 minutes, the entire podium that he is speaking at is filled with forks, knives, spoons, butter knives, and every time he reaches his hand pocket, people are just dying laughing. And so I used, that was, goodness, I mean, I was 15 or 16 years old. Fast forward almost 15 years later, my first game with Joe West, he's at home plate, and I knew, you know, Joe's pretty stern on the rookie, so I didn't want to mess it up, especially being a catcher. And I went back and told him, I said, hey, Joe, years and years ago, you spoke in Nashville, Tennessee, and you started putting silverware on the podium there, and everybody was dying laughing. It was a great story. I'll never forget it. And he comes, he's at home plate with all four of his buddies. We had just gotten done with the national anthem, and he goes, boys, I've been telling you that story for 5 years. I told you it was true, and this guy just confirmed it. And so from then on out, Joe West, I had him in my back pocket, and every time I saw him, I'd reach into my pocket and act like I was putting a piece of silverware out, and he would just chuckle. And so I was very, very fortunate to have that story, or else might have a different story about Joe punching me on a pitch 9 inches outside.
Caleb Joseph is with us. We're talking baseball here. So, Caleb, I want to ask you, do you think you could be a good third base coach? I feel for Phil Nevin because he is now the whole offseason, I'm sure he's going to be second-guessing himself, losing sleep, all of the above. He gets hammered for the decision that he made to send Aaron Judge and sort of the biggest moment of the game in the wild card game at Fenway.
Oh, yeah. It's a thankless job. You're expected to do a perfect job, and your screw-ups are completely magnified. It's almost like umpiring, really. Great umpires rarely get noticed or acknowledged, but when they screw it up, boy, I tell you, people come down with a heavy hammer. And rightfully so, but we've had a number of sins or no sins during our year this year, and I'm thinking I really would not want that job. I really wouldn't, because, again, like I said, you can only be blamed. And to make a very, very, very split-second decision, you're trying to play those plays out before it happens, speed of the runner, wherever he is, the arm strength of the outfielder, the cutoff man, the ability of a catcher to pick a ball, the conditions of the field, score of the game. All these things are happening in literally a blip of a second. So there is absolutely no chance I would ever want that job, unless they wanted to add a couple zeros to the end of the paycheck.
Then you'd endure it.
Then buy Predator season tickets in perpetuity. Then I might have to consider it. But no, very tough job, and I feel for the guy. And you feel for guys, too, when they're on third base, and you're going, oh, man, this guy's going to get hammered. Sure enough, they do.
What was the rule of thumb when you were playing at Fenway on balls going off the monster? Because that was a huge factor on that play, and Kike Hernandez is given a lot of credit, as he should, for coming over to play the angle perfectly. But I'm thinking, like, what did you guys go over? Hey, guys, when you're on second, you're running the bases, pick up the third base coach, when you get the funky bounces off the monster.
Yeah, the biggest thing in baseball is, especially that was stressed to me with Buck Showalter in Baltimore, whom I deem one of the greatest fundamental coaches of all time, do not make that third base coach hold you or not hold you because he's not sure if you want to score. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Get after it with a head full of steam and make him stop you. And there is a distinct difference when you're watching a guy run the bases like his hair's on fire and he is desperately trying to score versus the hesitation of,
you're not going to send me, are you? Yeah.
Yeah, chopping your steps, making sure that you're hitting it on the right angle, and then picking up the coach late and all of these things. Just get after it. And one of the biggest things I see is guys running with their head down. I mean, you have to anticipate that everything that happens in the game, you have to anticipate it. You have to be playing the next play, which is what I learned from Jeff Forehand over at Lipscomb. You have to play the next play. Anticipate that ball is going off the wall as soon as it leaves the bat, and you are desperately trying to score home. And that's when it becomes a little bit easier. And I can't get inside the brain of the runner if that was the case in Boston, but those things usually make it easier for third base coaches to let you go or to hold you up.
It is funny how Fenway affects the game. The two balls that Stanton hit, well, he hits three, and at a different park, it would have been completely flipped, right? The two that he hits off the top of the wall are probably gone at virtually any other baseball stadium in America, and then the one he actually slices inside the pesky pole probably would not have been a home run
anywhere else. Fenway sucks. I mean, it really does. People, oh, my goodness, you know, when I was playing in the AL East, you get to play at Yankee Stadium and Fenway Park, you know, before the games. Welcome to Fenway Park, America's most beloved ballpark. And I'm going, there's nothing beloved about this place at all. Like, nothing. It's funky. Like, it's like somebody came in that had a late night the night before and designed this field. There's not, like, get out of town. Who would put a wall and then this crazy long right center angle and then the weird bullpens and then, oh, let's wrap it all the way around and call it Pesky's Hole. Like, who thinks of this? Like, somebody was drunk when they decided to design that. And it's a headache. And it is an absolute headache. And I'll tell you, I will say, though, I've been fortunate in my career to hit one over the monster and around Pesky's pole. I got a 97-mile-an-hour fastball from Joe Kelly outside. I squared it up. I looked to left field. I thought it was going to left field over the monster, and sure enough, it was almost behind me when I hit it, and it was curving towards Pesky's pole. And Shane Victorino leaped in, and halfway into the stands, ball in his glove, and as soon as he hit the wall around his waist, he dumped it right inside of Pesky's pole. It was the shortest homer of the season that year. I think that was 15, maybe, at 302 feet.
302. You got to love it.
That's right.
So,
it's like high school baseball.
Caleb, last year we were talking to you during the postseason. We had to endure the entire postseason in the neutral fields. You know, they started to sprinkle in the fans at the end. But one thing that has been apparent for all of us that watched the two wildcard games, first of all, the intensity of winner-take-all is definitely, you feel that. But also the crowds at both games. Isn't it nice to have that reaction of the crowd? You played in some postseasons where you had that kind of thing. I remember talking to you when you were with the Orioles and you guys were making your little run. It's just, you can't beat that.
Cannot beat it. And the players are so thankful, and they feed so much off the energy of the crowd. And quite honestly, it's amazing playing at home in the playoffs in front of your home crowd. But it's just as good playing on the road, especially when you win an entire season with no fans. The Mariners, I was with the Mariners this year, and they were half a game out going into kind of the last series, and there was 45,000 fans there. They sold out three games in a row, and
that was pretty cool.
I
love when a team goes on a late run like that and the fever catches. That was really cool.
You're right. We'd been hanging in there all season, and those players were just so energized, and the city was so energized, and it was just good to see. It was good to feel that baseball was fully back, and to see some of this stuff in the playoffs, people are just excited. And it just shows you how important sport is just to the American fan. I can't wait to get to Bridgestone. That's all I've been thinking about was I'm so sick and tired of watching those games with the cardboard cutouts, and they did the best they could during the season, but I can't wait. And I'm sure those players are thinking the same thing, but there's nothing like the crack of the bat and the roar and the anticipation of a play happening right in front of your eyes at a baseball game during the playoffs. And I tell you, it is the fans are the ones that make that happen. And they deserve so much credit. And we can't, as players, cannot thank them enough for showing up and supporting the game that we love.
Talking to Caleb Joseph, longtime Major League Baseball catcher and Nashville native. So last night during the wild card game, you know, Yadier Molina is on the plate or behind the plate, and you know, one of the best in the game for sure in his era and in all time. But Bellinger gets on base. I know it. Everybody else knows it. Yadi knows it, that he's going to try and steal on him. And it was just one of those weird plays on the transfer where he can't quite get the grip to make the play, and so Bellinger gets the stolen base. But when you're in that situation behind the plate where you know, like, it's coming, like, what's going through your mind? How much are you really thinking in that moment?
Oh, man, I was so fortunate. One of the coolest plays I've ever made was in the 2014 playoff run we had. We were playing against the Kansas City Royals, and Jerrod Dyson was just a madman on the bases that year. And we had, as an Orioles catching corps, we had done such a great job of throwing guys out, and they had done such a good job of stealing bases, and so it had become part of a storyline. It was like a story. People loved it, that, man, we can't wait to see these guys try and steal off guys that can really throw. And sure enough, two games into it, they pinch run Jerrod Dyson at first base in like the seventh inning, and everybody in the entire world knows what's coming, and I'm behind home plate, and I'm just, honestly, you kind of go numb. When you're playing, you kind of go numb just knowing the task at hand and knowing what you have to do. And you're trying your best to slow your adrenaline down. You're just trying to slow it down because it is happening so fast, and you can't prepare for that moment. You can't. You can try as best as you please to ramp up that type of intensity, but you can't measure adrenaline, and it's really hard to replicate. And so I was fortunate to just be able to have a perfect transfer, a great throw, and an unbelievable tag by J.J. Hardy. But that's all I was really thinking was just try and do it in slow motion, because I know I'm going to be amped up. And if I don't try to slow down a bit, I'm going to be completely out of control, and I might bottle that transfer. And if you don't get the transfer down, it truly doesn't matter. It's over. So he is one of the greatest, and he has thrown out, goodness, hundreds of guys stealing bases, and he's done it in the playoffs. He's won World Series, Gold Gloves, all this. And just some of those things that a lot of it depends on the action you get from the pitcher. If the pitcher gives you a bit of a chance, you feel like you can slow down even more. But if you feel like you've got a rush, the first thing to go usually is a transfer. And if your transfer is not any good and you don't have a great grip on the ball can go anywhere, up, down, left, right. But most importantly, you've got to actually get it to the throwing hand. And so that's tough to see because he's one of the best. And, you know, they used to say one of the coolest moments in baseball was the stolen base, right?
Yeah.
The analytics want it to be a home run, but there's such a great anticipation of a guy stealing a base. And so it's funny how the game sort of changes in the playoffs, right? Kind of runs are at a premium, and those type of things make such a huge difference when, all you read in July and August is stolen bases are at an all-time low for the game of baseball. And then as soon as the games actually matter, you start doing the little things to win the game. I don't want to jump back on that analytic bandwagon, but it's the team that's going to figure this out, to blend it and really blend it perfectly, they're going to be able to corner the market, I believe.
So
who's the closest to that, in your opinion?
Oh, man.
I know that's kind of putting you on the spot.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Cardinals have historically done it really well. I know the Rays are really, really analytically driven. The Angels with Madden, he's got quite a bit of leeway. The Yankees seem to be heavy, heavy analytically held, which is some of the questions, you know, Boone might have to face. More about the offense, but you're talking about it's just slowly taken over. And, I mean, look at the Giants. And that's the problem. The problem is the Giants come out of nowhere and they catch fire, and everybody's going to say, well, it's because of their analytic department, because they got that new guy. Can't remember how to pronounce his name, but that's the only reason. Well, they've got a lot of really good players. I mean, Crawford, Posey, Belt. They added some really key pieces. And so there's this tug of war that's going on right now, but I'm interested to see who San Diego hires. That's going to be interesting because they got quite a few players, and they seem to be on that road of trying to blend it, and I know it didn't work out at all this year, but I'm interested to see who gets the job there.
So what's next for you as we wrap this up?
What's going on? I'm strapping the skates on, and I'm going to spend 2 or 3 years training and try out for the National Predators.
All right. Awesome.
I like that.
Awesome.
No, I don't know. It's probably at that point where it's time to really reconsider where we're at. I probably would like to entertain something having to do with maybe TV or radio with some of these clubs. I've had a couple of inquiries about that, and that's fun and interesting. I've probably got a couple of coaching gigs that are going to open up, but with a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old, it's you guys know how it is. It's tough being away 200 days a year, so having the flexibility of maybe being able to stay in the game and work 80 to 100 games and be home for majority of the season is quite appealing to me, especially now that I've got a little boy that's playing baseball. I mean, I missed every single football game this year. That just killed me, killed me.
And
so,
brutal.
I want to be there for him, and so we'll see. But I'd like to stay in the game. I really love baseball and just everything that it's been able to provide for me. And it's the most beautiful game on earth.
Wish we had a team here, Caleb. You'd be a no-brainer to do that.
That's right. That's right.
Maybe someday we can dream.
Maybe.
I think.
Play the long game.
Do you hear anything about that? You got any news you could share with us on that front?
Say that again.
Have you heard anything? I mean, you're in the baseball circles. I mean, do people really talk about this actually happening someday, Nashville, or is it just a big pipe dream?
I want to believe it, and I really do. I just, for every person that says it's going to happen, there's another person that says, nope, this is baloney.
Yeah,
and
that's our vibe. Yeah, it's the same
thing.
It's
killing me. It's absolutely killing me. I mean, I talked to a clubhouse guy in Oakland, knowing that that's probably unrealistic because it's so far away and it would change the dynamic of the travel in that league. But they've been trying to get a new stadium there in Oakland for how long? In Tampa? I mean, Montreal? Are you kidding me? Nashville would be absolutely perfect for Tampa in terms of the travel. It'd move everything a little bit more north. Tampa seems like the most realistic team to relocate, in my opinion. But if you're going to add a team, you're going to have to add two teams. Then you have unequal divisions. It's an absolute mess. But they would support it. I totally believe that Nashville would support a baseball team and do a heck of a job. There's so many people that grow up here that are either Cardinals fans, Braves fans, because, you know, all they have is the Sounds, and they want to cheer for a specific team. And the market's huge now. It's growing more than ever. We have things like traffic now, which I absolutely hate. But with that comes more people. And so I hope it happens. And if it does, oh, my goodness, I'll sign up to do anything. I'll be the clubhouse kid hanging jock straps and shining his shoes all day. I'll do it.
Yep. Dragging the field. You get it, driving the John Deere. Dragging the infield.
Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes.
Hey, we appreciate you taking.
I might even try and suit up for him, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Bullpen catcher.
Hey, we thank you for your time, sacrificing a little golf time. We appreciate it as always. We'll check in with you here soon. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, you got it. Have a blast. Thanks, guys.
Caleb Joseph, he is a gem for sure. Love talking with him, and we appreciate his time.
Yeah,
we'll come
good.
Back. We'll wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. Hey, you can support Stars on Saturday, October 16th. That's not this Saturday, but next Saturday, by running, walking, or boogieing. The Nashville Striders 21st Annual Shelby Bottoms Boogie 15K and 5K Run or Walk at Shelby Bottoms Park. This event is perfect for the avid runner as well as the casual jogger. Or you can show your support and participate virtually. For more information, visit starsnashville.org. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase.
You might even hear that song. They play good tunes at Shelby at the Boogie.
You could.
Chase loves that song.
You Make My Dreams Come True?
Yeah.
That's a great song.
If you've seen the movie 500 Days of Summer, you get another angle. This song pops up everywhere.
Yeah, I think it's
right?
been
it's a timeless.
Movies,
but... It's a timeless song. But if you've seen that movie recently, you have to chuckle when you hear song. It's a good
victory song.
It's a victory song. It is. It's that wake up with a good feeling song.
Yes.
Pep in the step.
500 Days of Summer. I'm not sure if I remember.
I've seen that. Early 2000.
A couple Joseph about a decade Gordon ago, Levin. Probably.
I'm going to say it's more like
2009.
I was going to throw it in there like about 10 years ago, about a decade ago. Zooey Deschanel, very good performance. Now, I forget the guy's name, the lead
Joseph
guy.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
He's very, not a name that you, off the top of your head, said, oh, yeah, but you've seen him in a lot of movies. He's solid.
Yeah. Zooey Deschanel, though, yes.
She fan. Plays a great role
Big
in that
fan.
Movie. Yeah, she's funny.
Big fan.
Yeah. Did I see... Speaking of music, I know we're talking about movies, but music. Did you see Red Hot Chili Peppers coming to Nissan?
They are.
Stadium? How about
they
that?
Are. Now, yeah, that'll be cool. That'll be a good show. I've never seen them, so that,
I
might,
haven't either.
That might be one I have to
That's a must
check
do.
Off.
They're so good live.
Yeah, I might have to do that. Well, you know, when we have the, because we have the Buzz, 1029 The Buzz, we have the guitars hanging in the hallway. There is a Red Hot Chili Peppers guitar.
Oh, that is right in their wheelhouse right there, the Buzz.
Yep. So
Friday night, August 12th, 2022. That'll be, that'll be crazy. On a Friday night, too. Whew.
That'll be good. I'm going to have to try and do that one.
Yeah, I've never seen them before. Never seen them.
Yeah, I'm not, I'm tonight going to see Pitbull. So excited
oh,
about
wow.
that. Yeah.
Nice.
Is that at Bridgestone?
Yeah. It is, yeah.
Yep. I did not know. Oh, wow. I didn't. That one somehow escaped me. I've never seen Pitbull. He's fun.
Yeah. So.
You have to admit, he's got some catchy songs.
He
like,
does.
Even if you're like, you're kind of shy about it, you know deep down you
well,
like
he's
some
just
of those
one
songs.
Of those, the minute you hear a song, you don't have to. You, it doesn't matter if you've heard it before. Like, you know it's Pitbull.
Yep.
It's like, oh, like right? It's just got a certain sound to it, and Pitbull's you can identify him no matter if you've heard the song or not, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, so be co-owner of Team Track House, which is based here in Nashville, so got the Nashville ties now that he's involved in racing.
I have a trivia question for you guys.
Okay.
All time in Major League Baseball in postseason play, what third baseman leads with the most home runs in postseason play? What third baseman has hit more postseason home runs than any other third baseman in MLB history?
I think Willie's going to have a better shot at this than I am.
Wow, that's a great question.
Why, Chase?
Well, Willie's the baseball encyclopedia, okay. Unless it's Chipper Jones.
Well, I mean, I thought of Chipper Jones.
I would say Chipper Jones.
Chipper Jones is probably in the mix because I think of, here's my deduction, trying to come up with an educated guess. I would look at, first of all, Yankees, because they were in the World Series so often.
Right, you have to think about games played.
Yes,
right.
But I don't know that they had one third baseman that really jumps to mind. So I'm going to throw them
A-Rod,
out.
Because A-Rod was there for a while, but I mean, he wasn't always the third baseman.
Yeah, he was a shortstop a lot of the times.
And Jeter was short.
And then you go into the era where there's three rounds of playoffs, so there's a lot more games. So Chipper Jones definitely has played enough games to get into the mix, but I'm going to guess it's not him.
Chipper Jones has played more than anybody. There's five guys on this list. Chipper Jones has played more than anybody. He is not the leader. He is on the list. He is tied for second.
Tied for second.
He has played 83 postseason games, which is pretty significantly more than anybody else on the list.
Wow.
I have a pretty good idea.
All right.
I'm leaning Justin Turner. Topical. Hit a home run last night. And the Dodgers have been
He's been in his share of postseason games.
Year.
All right, let's nominate Justin Turner.
Justin Turner has played the second most postseason games with 69, and he indeed has 13 postseason home runs, which leads all third basemen all-time MLB history.
Outstanding deduction by Elijah. All right, let's see if we can get the other guys
Who's
in the top five.
Who's tied with Chipper for second?
I'm going to throw out Scott Rolen.
Ooh. Played for a long time.
Incorrect. Nope. Not on the list.
Good guess, though.
The
hard part is like trying to decipher guys that played multiple positions.
Well, I'm assuming they had to play.
Is Longoria on there?
Who?
Nope.
Longoria? No.
Evan Longoria? Nope.
Oh, it's an interesting thought there.
How many are active players?
I mean,
is Alex Bregman?
I mean, Oh, Alex Bregman.
Let me just say this. The gold star is going to Elijah.
Elijah is scoring.
Alex Bregman is the one tied with Chipper. He has played in 57 postseason games. But does his count, though? I mean,
how many did he know what pitch was coming?
We'll never, for a friend.
Yeah. How many of the trash can ones?
LSU guy, the school, Will Wade. He'll plead the fifth.
So, who are the other two? Who's four and five?
Oh.
Actually, I should say that it's
Adrian Beltre.
They're tied for three because Justin Turner is your leader with 13. Bregman and Chipper Jones are tied for second with 11. And then the other two are tied for third with 10.
Was Beltre one of them?
It's a good guess. It's a really good guess, but no. Not on the list.
Who are
the
we
other
missing?
Two guys are not current players.
Not current players, okay?
I think you're missing an obvious one.
Mike Schmidt?
That's good. That's good.
George Brett?
I don't think
there
he played.
There you go. There's the obvious.
George Brett. Played
right?
a lot of postseason games.
George
Brett is
one of them that's tied with 10, and then another former, you've already kind of said him, so it is A-Rod.
Okay, so it's
A-Rod.
It's A-Rod.
Yeah.
It's A-Rod. We don't like acknowledging his greatness either, but
yeah. Does his count? Ask him for a friend.
So who are we missing?
George Brett, how many games?
It's Brett and A-Rod. George Brett played in 43. He has the least amount of postseason games. 43. A-Rod has the actually Bregman has the second least with 57. A-Rod 58. Chipper led the way with 83. Justin Turner 69. Postseason games.
That's a great. I love that. I love questions like that. I saw George Brett hit three in one game off the Yankees, and they lost the game. It was 1978, and he had some big binges in postseason. George Brett, he came up big. A lot of those home runs were huge home runs. Not that there's any non-big home run, I guess, but
right. As opposed to,
but every game was even more. That's why I loved about the two-tiered playoffs was every game was so magnified. Now with three, like there's more teams in there, there's more games, there's a good and a bad that goes with that.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back. Richard Deitch on the other side. Always good to talk to him. We'll do that to begin the second hour. But right now I'm going to talk to you about my friends at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. And week five is an offer you just cannot refuse. Every football fan should jump on this. Listen up, new customers. You can bet just $1 on any NFL game, and if it wins, you win $100 in free bets. And this is how you win. If either team scores a point, yes, a 0-0 tie. The last time that happened in the NFL, 1943. I would put this in the no-brainer category. DraftKings customers can also get skin in the game with new same-game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for bigger payouts. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. All you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that promo code 1025GAME and just bet $1 on any NFL game. And if it wins, you win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. That promo code you need to use, 1025GAME, this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.